emphasized that Iran is committed to brotherhood with all Islamic states. Reflecting on their rapidly evolving global events, the leader called on Islamic states to keep their vigilance and plan their responses to global developments carefully and quickly. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that unity does not mean aligning on every political issue, but rather recognizing common interests and defining one's position in a way that prevents divisions and disputes among the Muslims. The leader of the Islamic Revolution says the Zionist regime of Israel, as a proxy force of the world's colonial powers, is committing genocide against Palestinians on behalf of these colonizers. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks after leading the Eid al-Fitr prayers in Tehran's Grand Musalla. The leader noted that the criminal group of Zionists kill people, commit crimes in Gaza, and launch attacks on other countries, while the U.S. and Western states openly support the regime in its blatant terrorism. He also emphasized that the Zionist entity is the only true proxy force in the region, which must be uprooted from the Palestinian land. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei warned that if enemies try to stir up seditions inside Iran, or if the U.S. threatens to take action against Tehran, they will receive a firm and crushing response, and that the great nation of Iran will reciprocate accordingly. Well, now joining us more on this story is our guest, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, a journalist and political commentator, joining us there from London. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. I do want to ask you, I mean, Sayyid Ali Khamenei did mention some very interesting points, but I do want to focus on the point where he emphasized the importance of unity, specifically among the Muslim nations. How important is this unity now more than ever before?
Well, had there been unity, Israel wouldn't have genocided the number of Palestinians it has. Israel would not have been incurring all the damage in Syria and taking over the territory of Syria. Had there been unity of these Muslim states, South Lebanon wouldn't have been destroyed kind of indiscriminately, the civilians of Beirut, no less. And of course, Yemen also wouldn't be targeted. Of course, all the things which the Israelis do on a regular basis, and the Anglo-Zionist Empire is doing currently, literally bombing about four nations at the same time, simultaneously. You know, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Palestine are all being bombed to smithereens at one point or another. So none of this would happen if one thing was done, and that was that the Gulf Arab nations, the Muslim nations all around the world, who constitute around 2 billion in terms of population of the world, and who control some of the greatest resources that the world has, oil, gas, etc. If these nations were to listen to Ayatollah Khamenei, and it's not today that he's been saying this, he's been saying this since 1979, since the revolution started, and Ayatollah Khomeini was the one who first called for this unity. He asked the Muslim nations to come together and to create a confederation. You don't have to have unity on all affairs, as Ayatollah Khamenei again re-emphasized in his speech at the prayers. It's really unity on the basis of common interests. So Palestine, for instance, is a common interest. The security of the Muslim nations is a common interest. Iran could certainly help these nations to bolster up their military and technological power, to become independent, become sovereign, genuine sovereign nations, instead of being proxies and puppets, just as Israel is, as Ayatollah Khamenei said. And if we see where it's got Israel at the moment, the reality is everybody wants to focus, of course, on the dreadful massacre and genocide which Israel and America are committing in that region. And that's also partly demoralizing, because if you only focus on the death of the civilians, the children, and the 200,000 or so Palestinians that have been killed, according to the Lancet report and others, then you get demoralized and you think America is so powerful, Israel is so powerful, we can't do anything about it, and you buy into that Israeli-American diaspora, that propaganda. The reality is that Israel is only surviving in that region because America pumps in billions and billions of dollars a year, and America is using Israel as its proxy in the region. And it's the Arab and Muslim nations that need to get together and say, look, enough is enough. We can't have this, because if you now go and attack Iran, which is what Trump is saying, Trump said if Iran doesn't make a deal, there will be bombing the like of which they've never seen before.
So exactly, exactly. Well, I'm afraid I do have to cut you off there. Hussein Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. Tehran has issued an official warning to Washington against any aggression amid rising regional tensions. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has summoned the Swiss Chargé d'Affaires, who represents U.S. interests in Iran, over recent threats made by President Donald Trump. A Foreign Ministry Director General condemned the U.S. President's inflammatory remarks as violations of international law and the United Nations Charter. Tehran has stressed its resolve to respond decisively and swiftly to any threat. The Swiss envoy gave assurances that the message would be relayed to Washington. Trump has declared that he might order military strikes against Iran if it fails to reach an agreement with his administration on its nuclear program. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has dismissed the possibility of direct negotiations, stating that Tehran will not negotiate under coercive conditions, but remains open to talks on an equal footing. One more death and destruction in Gaza as Israel's genocidal war turns the Eid al-Fitr celebrations into another day of mourning. Hundreds of people in Khan Yunis bid farewell to paramedics killed in an IOF strike on Rafah. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society announced recovering the bodies of 14 rescue workers and a UN employee killed in Israel's last week attack. Also in Khan Yunis, the latest airstrikes claimed the lives of at least a dozen civilians, nine of them members of a family. In central Gaza, an airstrike targeted a group of people east of El Masdar, killing three more Palestinians and injuring several others. In northern Gaza, occupation forces opened fire on a group of Palestinians in Jabalia, killing two. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 80 people have lost their lives and more than 300 wounded in Israeli attacks across Gaza in just the past 2 days. The death toll since the Israeli regime resumed its deadly strikes across Gaza has surpassed 1,000. Some 2,300 people have also been wounded. Well, now joining us with the latest developments from Khan Yunis is our correspondent, Ahmad Al-Najjar. Ahmad, we're talking about over 80 dead just over this supposedly celebration of Eid al-Fitr there in Gaza. They're calling for a forced-out evacuation of Rafah. There's so many things going on during a time that's supposed to be celebration, basically. What details you have for us on the ground, Ahmad?
Well, exactly, Caitlin. It's only a matter of a few minutes until the sun sets on the second day of Eid al-Fitr here in Gaza. And with all my heart, I wish if I could share any positive or pleasant development from what's going on here, but I can't, because the overwhelming scene here in Khan Yunis and all over the strip is the scene of the brutal massacres against the helpless civilians here in the Gaza Strip. Just over the past hour, two more massacres were committed within the northern parts of the Gaza Strip in Gaza City, within the At-Tufah neighborhood in eastern Gaza City. A residential building belonging to Hamada family was targeted, massacring 10 members of the family, including two women and three children, in addition to another attack that took place within the Al-Burayj refugee camp in central Gaza, targeting a Dwaik family and killing also three members of that family. But the largest numbers in terms of the massacres that were committed just over the past 24 hours were committed actually here in southern Gaza Strip, focusing on Khan Yunis City, where at least three mass massacres were committed against the families here, mostly within the safe zones that the occupation is designating now for those being displaced to head to, starting within the Al-Mawasi area in western Khan Yunis. A tent was targeting, killing three Palestinians, and also within the Asda area in northwestern Khan Yunis, a residential building belonging to Abu Aisha family was targeted, killing six members of the family, 9 members, the entire family, was wiped out. Also here in Western, the Khan Yunis refugee camp, another residential building of Miqdad family was targeted, killing 4 members of the family. And these scenes of attacks and brutal massacres is what is driving the people out of their homes and towns following the new evacuation order that were released by the occupation this morning.
That is the time we have, but I do want to say that Ahmed Najjar, definitely from the tone of your voice, you definitely reflect all the suffering that the people in Gaza are going through, and we hope that this genocide will definitely end soon. Thank you very much, Ahmed Najjar, our correspondent there from Khan Yunis. Well, today may be Eid al-Fitr, but it is certainly not Eid in the Gaza Strip, where the Israeli regime has resumed its genocidal killings against Palestinians. Although there is a new ceasefire proposal back into the picture, one which Hamas has already approved, there is not much hope that it would lead to a ceasefire. Roya joins us now with more.
The Israeli regime has broken the ceasefire and has gone on a full offensive in the Gaza Strip, killing hundreds of Palestinians with the blessing of the United States. The U.S. and the Israeli regime blame Hamas. U.S. said Hamas, quote, could have released the captives to extend the ceasefire, but instead chose refusal and war, end quote. The ceasefire deal that the U.S. helped broker, however, did not require Hamas to release more captives to extend the halt in fighting beyond its first phase. These are the grim stats from this genocide. The death toll in the Gaza Strip has now surpassed 50,000. Over 920 were killed since the ceasefire was broken by the Israeli regime, with over 2,000 injured. Even during the ceasefire, Israel murdered 170 Palestinians. Before the ceasefire, meaning during October 7, 2023 through January 18, 2025, over 46,000 Palestinians were murdered by the Israeli regime. Keep in mind, nearly 70% of deaths in Gaza are women and children. Out of that, 44% are children, the youngest a day-old boy and the oldest a 97-year-old woman. For example, a hit on a home in Rafah killed 17 members of one family. The dead included 5 children, their parents, and another father and his 3 children. Another in Gaza City killed 27 members of a family, half of them women and children, including a 1-year-old. The Israeli Prime Minister has boldly stated after the resumption of the killing spree that attacks were only the beginning and that Israel would press ahead until it achieves all of its war aims, destroying Hamas and freeing all captives held by the resistance group. Additionally, he stated all further ceasefire negotiations will take place under fire. Israel also cut off all food, medicine, fuel, and other goods to Gaza, while aid groups warned supplies would run out in 10 days' time. On the ground, the Israeli regime forces have expanded their ground offensive in the southern Gaza Strip, with troops advancing deeper into Rafah. Their aim is to expand a buffer zone along the borders of the enclave called the Philadelphia Corridor, as seen here, located on the border with Egypt. On the political front, a new Gaza ceasefire proposal has been presented from mediators Egypt and Qatar. Israel said it has made a counter-proposal in full coordination with the third mediator, the United States. Hamas said it was ready to release 5 living captives, including an American Israeli, from Gaza in return for Israel allowing aid into the territory and a weeks-long pause in fighting. Israel would also release hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Although the Israeli regime gave no details about the counter-proposal before it broke the ceasefire, it had demanded Hamas returns the 59 captives it still holds. 24 of them are believed to be alive. Israel also wants Hamas to give up power, disarm, and send its leaders into exile. Many believe, however, the Israeli prime minister is displaying willingness to negotiate as a show only.
The military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has conducted military operations against the Israeli regime. The Al-Quds brigades launched rockets at settlements surrounding the Gaza Strip and the Israeli Hadzarim air base in the southern occupied Palestinian territories. The group also targeted Israeli soldiers and military vehicles in northern Gaza with artillery shells. This after the group's recent rocket barrages on settlements surrounding the Gaza Strip, including a confirmed hit on the Sderot settlement in the southern occupied territories. The operations are a direct response to Israel's ongoing war crimes against Palestinians. While a petition has been launched in Austria calling for the immediate expulsion of Israeli ambassador David Roet, following his controversial remarks in which he advocated for the killing of Palestinian children. The petition, supported by Palestine Solidarity activists and Jewish anti-Zionist groups, condemns Roet's statements and draws attention to Austria's continued diplomatic ties with Israel. Our correspondent Dieter Renisch reports from Vienna.
Controversial remarks by the Israeli envoy have sparked outrage among the Palestinian solidarity community in Austria. Addressing members of the Jewish community on March 20, Ambassador David Roet is heard saying there should be a death sentence for 16-year-old teenagers in Gaza, and if Europe invests in rebuilding Gaza, Israel will have to destroy it the next time. Palestine solidarity activists launched a petition to the Austrian government calling for the expulsion of the diplomat. The remarks have been heavily condemned by Jewish anti-Zionist activists in Austria who have recently launched the Vienna Jewish Anti-Zionist Declaration to strengthen Jewish pro-Palestinian voices in Europe. They criticized the close relationship between the Austrian Prime Minister Christian Stocker and the Israeli ambassador. Some lawyers and solicitors prepared legal steps in response to the comments made by Roet and those in attendance. While there is strong condemnation in the international media, Austrian journalists have been silent about the video.
Activists are outraged over the continued alliance between the genocidal regime in Israel and the Austrian government. In a balanced act of disrespect to the Palestinian community, no Palestinian representatives were invited to the annual iftar hosted in the city hall by the mayor of Vienna last Thursday. While no Palestinian representatives were invited, Israeli representatives attended the event and were seated in the first row. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Well, thank you very much. This hour's headlines. More updates, as always, please stay tuned to World News. Goodbye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
Today, Palestinians in Gaza, despite enduring the worst atrocities in modern history, would rather live among the rubble of their homes than be forced to move out yet again. Any future plan for Gaza without taking Hamas into account is definitely doomed to fail. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote when President Donald Trump said last month he wanted the United States to take over Gaza and resettle its more than 2 million inhabitants in Egypt and Jordan, he effectively put the onus on Arab leaders to come up with a counterproposal. Arab leaders did exactly that at an emergency summit of the Arab League in the Egyptian capital Cairo recently. They endorsed the plan proposed by Egypt to reconstruct the war-ravaged Gaza Strip. Unlike the real estate mogul turned president's absurd plan that was widely condemned, the Arab initiative would allow the Palestinians living in the territory to stay there, something the entire world has consensus on, except for the Zionist regime and its main patron, the United States. After Trump put forward his plan for Gaza, which United Nations experts said would amount to ethnic cleansing and a violation of international law, the White House signaled it was open to hearing what an Arab plan for post-war Gaza would sound like. Egypt's three-phase blueprint aims to reconstruct Gaza, which the Zionist regime has leveled to the ground over the past 16 months, over 4 to 5 years, and with an estimated cost of $53 billion. Maintain security and have the Palestinian Authority govern the territory. However, as expected, the Trump administration was quick to reject the Arab initiative. The White House said the proposal failed to take the reality of Gaza into account and that Trump stood by his vision to turn Gaza into a Riviera for tourism in West Asia, that is, after driving its residents out of their homes. The Arab vision, which calls for a committee of professional Palestinian technocrats to run Gaza affairs for 6 months before handing power to the internationally recognized Palestinian Authority in the occupied West Bank, was welcomed by Hamas, the Gaza-based resistance movement that the Zionist regime had vowed to eliminate but failed to do so. One could argue that such an outcome would at least be considered a quasi-victory for Israel, which has long described dismantling Hamas, the only independent political actor representing the Palestinian people in Gaza, as its ultimate goal in the genocidal war that killed nearly 49,000 people, most of them children and women, following the events of October 7, 2023. But it's clear that Benjamin Netanyahu wants a bigger piece of the colonial pie, and that is being communicated to the rest of the world by Trump, the best friend Israel has ever had in the White House. Israel sees Hamas as the main obstacle to subjugating the Palestinian people in the occupied territories and forcing them to abandon their long-held dream of establishing an independent Palestinian state with East Al-Quds as its capital. The Palestinians, along with most of the international community, have been demanding Israel withdraw to the 1967 borders. But the Zionist regime has been moving in the opposite direction, pushing illegal settlements deeper into Palestinian lands. Long before the new genocidal war was unleashed on Gaza in October 2023, Israel had been trying to weaken and ultimately dismantle Hamas as a political entity in the territory to pave the way for its colonialist agenda of ethnically cleansing the occupied territories from the river to the sea. With Trump, a former real estate tycoon, back in the White House, Netanyahu has seen a golden opportunity to fast-track that process by taking control of Gaza and turning the narrow strip of land on the eastern coast of the Mediterranean Sea into a luxury settlement for wealthy Zionists and a hub for Western tourists. Zionism at its core is based on the forced displacement of indigenous populations through intimidation and cutting of vital infrastructure and basic needs of survival, allowing Israeli settlers to move in and permanently occupy the lands. The The Trump-Netanyahu plan for Gaza would effectively kill the prospect of an independent state for Palestinians who want to reunite Gaza with the occupied West Bank as one state with East Al-Quds as its capital. Though the United States has not officially abandoned its policy of supporting a so-called two-state solution, President Trump, both during his first term and now in his second, seems to be moving in lockstep with Israel's far right by implementing policies that are anathema to an independent Palestinian state, apart from its potential to become, as Trump's former special envoy and son-in-law Jared Kushner has put it, a waterfront property. Gaza holds another promising wealth that Netanyahu seems to have set his sights on. The enormous gas field found in the eastern Mediterranean, especially off the coast of Gaza. Back in 1999, British Gas estimated that reserves in Gaza Marine alone contain about 1.1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. That same year, the Palestinian Authority, which governed Gaza at the time, granted the British agency a 25-year contract to exploit the natural gas field. Until now, the Zionist regime has not allowed Palestinians to receive a dime from this natural treasure to which they are entitled. In that context, Zionist regime prime ministers from Ehud Barak to Netanyahu have tried with varying degrees of urgency and through various illegal means to strip Palestinians living in Gaza of their sovereignty over their land and territorial waters. Netanyahu has an incentive to prolong the war on Gaza as long as possible. His genocidal intent, through carpet bombing of Gaza, destruction of its vital civilian infrastructure, and the use of starvation as a weapon of war, point to his desire to displace as many Palestinians from their land as possible. Netanyahu's refusal to enter negotiations with Hamas on the second phase of a fragile ceasefire that his regime was forced to accept in January also reveals the same malicious intent. The second stage of the agreement calls for a permanent end to the war and the full withdrawal of Israeli occupation forces from Gaza. The Zionist regime authorities have insisted that the war will not end until Hamas is fully defeated. Throughout the war, Israeli regime military commanders were often bewildered by how quickly Hamas and other Palestinian groups regrouped and re-emerged in areas of Gaza where they had declared them eliminated and defeated. Israeli regime leaders, not least Netanyahu, know too well that the power of Hamas stems not from its governance over Gaza or even its arms, but from its identity as a robust part of a unified Palestinian society and from its ideology of resistance against Israeli occupation and apartheid. It's noteworthy that most people in Gaza today are the descendants of Palestinian refugees driven to the territory in 1948, and hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were forcibly and violently displaced from their homeland to establish a so-called Jewish-majority state in line with the long-cherished agenda of the Zionist movement. Palestinians call May 15, 1948, when the Zionist regime was illegally created, the Nakba, or catastrophe. The Nakba followed a long process of forced expulsion, dispossession, and mass murder. For generations of Palestinians, the Nakba is far from over. Driven by the ideology of Zionism, the Zionist regime continues to oppress, dispossess, and murder Palestinians to this day. Today, Palestinians in Gaza, despite enduring the worst atrocities in modern history, would rather live among the rubble of their homes than be forced to move out yet again. The idea that they could be uprooted once more strikes the rawest of nerves for the war-ravaged population in Gaza. And Hamas, being part of the very fabric of Palestinian society, is there to stay with them. Any future plan for Gaza without taking Hamas into account is definitely doomed to fail.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for giving us this opportunity again, this opportunity that we are not worthy of. And yet every year He blesses us with this opportunity to go through this month of Ramadan. I want to share with you in the first khutbah, inshallah, some lines from the dua of our beloved fourth Imam, Al-Imam As-Sajjad, salawatullahi alayhi, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad, in which he is speaking about those who go through this month, and that even in this month they have shortcomings. And these were lines that I could relate to quite a bit. Because normally when Ramadan comes around, you say, well, this is the highlight of my spirituality. This is the peak. And then you find even at that peak, someone like myself has shortcomings. And this is why these lines are so special. Because the Imam speaks about these moments and even the mistakes that are made in the month of Ramadan. He says, Allahumma falaka alhamdu iqraran bil isa'a wa atirafan bil ida'a. O Allah, we praise you, and while we praise you, we are admitting to our own shortcomings. Wal ida'a, we still didn't make the best of this opportunity that we had. We could have done a lot more. We didn't make the best of it. Walaka min qulubina aqdun nadam wa min alsinatina sidqal i'tidhar. The true forgiveness and the true apology goes to us. And look at how the fourth Imam takes this opportunity, this shortcoming that he is speaking of. Of course, someone like him, he's Sayyidu Sajideen, he's Zainul Abideen, he's the best of the best, as good as they come. But he's speaking on our behalf. He says, Ya Allah, I lost this opportunity, this moment, I didn't take full advantage of it. فَأَجُرْنَا عَلَى مَا أَصَابَنَا فِيهِ مِنَ التَّفْرِيتِ. Look at how he takes this negative, turns it into a positive. He says, Ya Allah, I didn't make the best of this month. So because I didn't make the best of this month, then reward me for those things that I had shortcomings in doing. I had a shortcoming, but guess what I can do? I can do dua. I can raise my hands and ask for your reward. I can ask for your, you know, your affection, your blessings. فَأَجُرْنَا عَلَى مَا أَصَابَنَا أَجْرًا نَسْتَدْرِكُ بِهِ الْفَضْلَ الْمَرْغُوبَ فِيهِ. That extra amount of benefit that I was supposed to take from Ramadan and that I didn't take, oh Allah, because of this dua, give it to me. I'm not worthy of it because I didn't do the things I had to do. But I do acknowledge that my hands are empty, and hence because of the emptiness of my hands, give it to me. This is the humility and the vulnerability of our imams when it comes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. وَنَعْتَادُ بِهِ مِنْ أَنْوَاعِ الذُّخْرِ الْمَحْرُوضِ عَلَيْهِ. And he says, وَأَوْجِبْ لَنَا عُذْرَكْ عَلَى مَا قَصَّرْنَا فِيهِ مِنْ حَقِّكْ. You forgive us for the rights that you had upon us during this month, and that we did not act upon them. And one of the beauties of the du'as that we have when it comes to Ramadan and the passing of Ramadan, this is the du'a of the wada. This is, you're saying goodbye, you're saying farewell to this month. And yet the moment is so special that while you're saying farewell in multiple of these du'as, you are already praying for the next one. When you say farewell to someone, you say farewell to them. But in the du'as, you say farewell to this month and you're already praying for the next one. This is the significance of Ramadan. He's already speaking about the next one. He says, Ya Allah, وَأَبْلِغْ بِأَعْمَارَنَا مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِينَا مِنْ شَهْرِ رَمَضَانَ الْمُقْبِلِ. I want the next one too. فَإِذَا بَلَّغْتَنَا. If you get us to the next one, this one hasn't even ended yet. This one just ended. He's already praying for the next one. He says, فَإِذَا بَلَّغْتَنَا. If I get to the next one, O Allah, allow me to worship you in a way that you are worthy of. This is a dua for the next one. This one just ended. But this is the relationship that Ahl Bayt had with this month. And he continues. He says, وَأَدِّنَا إِلَى الْقِيَامِ بِمَا يَسْتَحَقُّهُ مِنْكَ الطَّاعَ. Then the lines continue, and I want to move on from the lines a little bit faster to get to the other lines that the Imam is mentioning. He says, O Allah, even in this month where the shayateen, they were tied down, even in this month where the shayateen were chained, there were still mistakes that I made. And this is the scary part of Ramadan. That even when these shayateen are tied down, my ego and my nafs still gets the best of me. He says, Allahumma inna natubu ilayka fi yawmi fitrina alladhi ja'altahu lil mu'minina eidan wa surura. O Allah, we do tawbah to you on this day that you have made Eid for your people. Wa li ahli millatika majma'a wa muhtashada. And you've made it a day where people come together. Min kulli dhanbin aznabna, from every sin that we committed. أو سوء أسلفناه, and every wrongdoing that we did. أو خاطر الشر أمذرناه, and every wrong thought that crossed our minds. This was Ramadan. This was the month that I wasn't supposed to have these wrong thoughts. This was the month that I was supposed to be pure. But yet I had shortcomings still. This is for myself. Tawbata, this is the key line. He says, I want to do that tawbah, but just not any normal tawbah. Tawbata man la yantawi ala ruju'in ila dhanba. I want to do the type of tawbah where the person who's doing it has an intention to never go back. This is the power of Ramadan. You can make that decision to never go back. And God forbid we end up in a situation where we say, yes, we committed this sin, but it's no problem. I'm going to go back to it. In Ramadan, I stayed away from it. After Ramadan, I'm going to go back to it. This becomes a major problem for our spirituality. And he continues with these lines. He says, make my tawbah, tawbatan nasuhan khalasat min ash-shakki wal-irtiyab. Make my tawbah one of those pure tawbahs. Fataqabbalha minna warda anna wa thabbitna alayhi. Place me and make me established and firm in the tawbah that I am doing. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we not only repent to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on a day like this, that our tawbah is tawbatan nasuha. It is the type of tawbah that you then stay firm to it. You stick to it. This is the power of Ramadan. I've said before, Ramadan did not come. Allah did not bless us with Ramadan so that my sleep could be considered worship and my breath could be considered tasbih. This benefit from Ramadan, everybody takes from Ramadan. Everybody takes this from Ramadan. But this is the very least. This is the very least. The great benefit of Ramadan is working on my habits and my akhlaq. This is what will make you worthy of this month, inshallah. Quick note before I go into the second khutbah, and that is that of course we know and we will never forget, brothers and sisters around the world, that on a day like this, though they celebrate Eid, there are those around the world from our own brothers and sisters who in the back of their mind have the greatest of concerns while they're celebrating the Eid. While they're celebrating the Eid, they don't know, God forbid, there's going to be a bombing. God forbid, there is going to be an attack. God forbid, they don't even know sometimes if they will make it to nightfall alive. This is a reality. This is a reality of our Muslim ummah today. And so when we hear about these, it really brings pain to our hearts. The scenes you see from India, Pakistan, Palestine, Afghanistan, so many other places as well. These are things that bring pain to the hearts of the human being. Why should a believer and a Muslim have to deal with these things? Why? And this reiterates the point that I've mentioned before, and I will reiterate as we move on as well, and that we have to understand as a community that no one is going to stand up for us. Nobody. This is the world that we live in. The world that we live in is a world where you have to place yourself in a place of authority, in a place of success, in a place of power, so that you can fend for your own community. And you can defend your own people. And you can stand up for the cause of Islam and stand up for the cause of Ahlul Bayt. Nobody else is going to do this. Nobody.
Enjoy this happy day. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight.
Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has said the old relationship with the United States is over. We take a look at the global media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered the story. President Donald Trump offered warm words against Canada's new prime minister, even as the two sides continue to trade threats after Trump announced new tariffs on auto imports. Donald Trump cited a very good conversation with Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, who said on Thursday that the old relationship with the United States is over. Trump on Friday morning, 28th of March, wrote that the two men held an extremely productive phone call and that we agreed on many things. That was a turnaround from many of his posts about former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who Trump frequently mocked as governor amid his repeated public statements about making Canada the 51st state of the U.S. Donald Trump didn't even mention absorbing the U.S.'s northern neighbor when asked about the latest tariff spat on Friday afternoon, 28th of March. He said, "We had a very, very good talk. He's going through an election now, and we'll see what happens. But we have Liberation Day, as you know, on 2nd of April. Trump used his phrase for a day he will impose reciprocal tariffs on nations around the world. He continued by saying, "And I'm not referring to Canada, but many countries have taken advantage of us, the likes of which nobody even thought was possible for many, many decades. And you know that has to stop. We're going to end up with a very good relationship with Canada and a lot of other countries." Those comments appear to carve out Canada from taking advantage of the United States. That, too, is a change from previous rhetoric. Last week, Donald Trump said, "Here's my problem with Canada. Canada was meant to be the 51st state. We don't need their cars. We don't need their lumber. We don't need their energy. We don't need anything from them." Donald Trump on Thursday, 27th of March, slapped 25% tariffs on car and light truck imports. That prompted statements from Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney to hit back with trade actions. Trump said the tariffs won't go into effect until 2nd of April, in theory, providing an opportunity to roll them back. Speaking on a trip to Greenland, a territory that Donald Trump said the United States must have, Vice President J.D. Vance was asked about how Americans should respond amid the anticipated spike in auto prices. Vance, a former Ohio senator, used the same language that Trump used when he berated Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the Oval Office. "They just don't have the cards," Vance said. "That means we're going to fight back even against some of our friends and their unfair economic practices," he said. Separating auto imports from domestic vehicles is challenging, with parts going in both directions across the borders between the United States, Canada, and Mexico in a continental supply chain. The U.S. automakers lobbied against the tariffs and secured a one-month pause from Trump before his announcement this week. We continue with the Daily Mail's coverage of this story. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney's office issued a statement after a phone call with Donald Trump. The statement said the Prime Minister informed the President that his government will implement retaliatory tariffs to protect Canadian workers and our economy following the announcement of additional U.S. trade actions on 2nd of April. Mark Carney's Liberal Party has seen its fortunes improve amid the trade clashes with Donald Trump. Canadian hockey fans have even booed during the national anthem in hockey games. The website Dagens.com has also covered the same story. For decades, Canada and the United States have shared a close alliance rooted in economic integration and mutual defense. But according to Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney, that era may now be officially over. Prime Minister Mark Carney stated on Thursday, 27th of March, that the long-standing cooperative relationship between Canada and the United States has ended following President Donald Trump's announcement of new 25% tariffs on foreign-made automobiles, including those imported from Canada. The tariffs will start on 2nd of April. Mark Carney, speaking at a press conference in Ottawa, said, "I reject any attempt to weaken Canada. The old relationship we had with the United States based on deeper economic integration and closer military and security cooperation is now over." Mark Carney, recently elected leader of Canada's Liberal Party, and serving as interim prime minister, pledged that Ottawa would respond with targeted countermeasures. He promised retaliatory tariffs designed to maximize impact in the United States and minimize it here at home. Mark Carney revealed that Donald Trump contacted him on Wednesday to arrange a phone call. He said, "I welcome this opportunity to discuss how we can protect our workers and strengthen our economies. I will make clear to the President that these interests are best served through cooperation and mutual respect, including respect for our sovereignty." Tensions have intensified in recent weeks, particularly after Donald Trump publicly floated the idea of annexing Canada as America's 51st state. The auto tariff announcement is part of a broad protectionist agenda that includes global steel and aluminium tariffs, a 20% blanket tariff on Chinese imports, and new levies on Canadian and Mexican goods, some of which were later partially delayed. On Wednesday, Trump threatened even higher duties if Canada and the European Union coordinate economic retaliation. Posting on his Truth Social platform, Donald Trump warned that both would be hit with much higher tariffs if they attempt to damage the U.S. economy. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 22, 2023. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and upon his pure progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I would like to congratulate all the respected people here in this meeting, including the heads of Iran's executive branches, our officials, and the ambassadors and representatives of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr. I would also like to congratulate the entire Iranian nation who are truly deserving of congratulations because of their behavior and their meritorious deeds during the month of Ramadan. I would also like to extend my congratulations to all the Muslims in the world and the entire Islamic nation. I hope that the Almighty God will bless everyone during this Eid. The month of Ramadan provides the environment for hearts to become closer to each other. All of the various dimensions of the month of Ramadan help to bring the hearts of the people closer to each other, both within the country and within the entire Islamic nation. First of all, the tenderness that is created in people by their fasting, prayers, supplications, and the recitation of the Quran is itself a source for bringing the hearts closer together. And piety brings hearts together just as the president pointed out in his statements. He stated this very well when he said that the secret to fasting is piety. In my opinion, the officials of Islamic countries should use this opportunity to increase unity and closeness among the members of the Islamic nation. Our problem today is division, even though the Quran prohibits division. Do not be like those who became divided into sects and deferred. Quran, Surah 3, verse number 105. And it commands us to be united. Hold fast altogether to Allah's cord and do not be divided into sects. Quran, Surah 3, verse number 103. The members of Islamic nation, the Islamic Ummah, are divided. Yes, there are different opinions, there are different sects, and there are different tastes. That's fine. But these different tastes do not mean that we should be deprived of the great blessing of the Islamic nation being united.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from the evil of Satan.